There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1654, how childhood and culture influence our relationship with money.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Karabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life. Welcome to So Money.
Picture this, like, I know you're also the daughter of Iranian immigrants, but me being the daughter of Mexican immigrants, my parents lived in survival mode. They didn't have a lot of money. Their biggest priority was just keeping the lights on. And the fact that they were able to do that, that was success in America. So that's what I thought was being fiscally responsible, paying my bills on time and not getting evicted. I didn't realize that you're supposed to be building your net worth, paying off debt, investing, all these things that are so important for our financial wellness.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Karabi. What did you learn about money growing up? What were the messages you received about money from parents, friends, media, your culture? Our guest today is the author of a new book called Cultura and Cash, in which she shares her journey as the daughter of Mexican immigrants and the money scripts that she needed to rewrite as an adult to ultimately claim financial security. Giovanna Gigi Gonzalez is a TikTok influencer, financial educator, and author of Cultura and Cash. During the Great Resignation, Gigi quit her 10-year corporate career to pursue her true passion, which is teaching financial literacy to young adults. In our podcast today, she highlights some of the advice from her book, Cultura and Cash, on how to avoid the financial pressures you may be receiving from family, from culture, and how to define or redefine financial security on your terms, which, by the way, may mean departing from some of the expectations placed upon you. Here's Gigi Gonzalez. Giovanna Gonzalez, welcome to So Money. Congratulations on your first of what I anticipate many books. Cultura, Cultura and Cash. I know you're like in the PTSD phase of being an author. I get it. But let's celebrate Cultura and Cash. Congratulations. This is your inaugural book as you have been helping many people with their personal finances, in particular, first-gen Latinas like you. Tell us a little bit about, first, before we get to the book, tell us a little bit about how you have cultivated this incredible community on TikTok, on Instagram. I know you have a passion for finance, but social media and community and all that is like a whole other, a whole other world. Tell me how you got into it.
Yeah. And thanks, Farnoosh, for having me on the show. I'm so excited to be here. First, I think I need to share that I developed a passion for financial literacy in my late 20s after struggling with money a lot myself. I self-taught myself money by reading over 50 personal finance books. And once I had a financial plan for myself, I had this fire inside me of like, how can I share this knowledge with other women? Because it's unfair that we don't get access to this information. So I looked into ways to sharing this knowledge with others, and I found a nonprofit called the YWCA. They were taking applications for volunteer financial educators. So I did that for almost 2 years while I did my investment management job full time. And then that was my life for a long time, just a traditional 9-to-5 with my hobbies on the side. But that all changed in March of 2021 when I started posting those same tips that I was already sharing in my community on TikTok. And that's just because of the bigness of the internet. And also people were glued to their phones during the pandemic. So it was a really good time to be showing up and being a creator. So I was consistent with it. I went viral the next month, which I got really lucky. With that virality, I gained 100,000 followers overnight. Right now, I'm almost at 200,000. But and that's what the magic of TikTok, you know, that you can really go viral and get a platform overnight because of the way the algorithm works. It's changed a bit since then, unfortunately. But when I grew the following, that's when I started getting opportunities to come speak to our university about budgeting 101, or can you do some money coaching with me? And I wasn't able to do both. I wasn't able to do this fun hobby that was now offering me compensation while having my other job, my corporate job. So I had to quit to do it full time.
We're so glad you did. Aren't you glad? Was it scary when you quit though? I mean, I got laid off. So the decision was made for me. And then I pursued my business that exists today. But when you were in that moment of trying to figure out how to break from that, because what I've learned about your narrative and your story is that you felt like you did everything right. You know, you went to college, you got a good job, a stable job. And then to depart from that, you know, although you may already have been realizing like this was a false bill of goods, it probably was a little challenging to learn, like, take this leap, which was a leap of faith, even though you were getting paid and you had hundreds of thousands of followers, but you know, it's the unknown.
Yeah. In addition to what you said, the other factors that were at play were that I was a part of the FIRE movement at the time. So I had a very clear path to retire at 45. The numbers were crunched. I had it. Yeah. Wow. It was figured out. Yeah. And this is on a $70,000 salary. I like to share that because people think you have to make six figures, but I just had a very frugal life. I don't have children. I don't have a mortgage. I was living in a low cost of living area. So that was one barrier that I'm like, wow, like I can retire at 45 doing what I'm doing. Now I'm going to go into the unknown. Will I ever be able to retire doing what I'm doing, right? Is this going to work or not? So that was one barrier. The other thing holding me back was that I really struggled in corporate. I worked for the majority of my corporate career. I worked for companies that didn't value me. They didn't promote me. They didn't give me pay raises. I was mistreated. And my last job, the one that I quit to be a content creator, was actually the best job that I'd had. I had a great boss, great work culture. So I'm like, I finally found a place that I feel accepted and I'm valued and I'm going up the corporate ladder. And I'm leaving this for what? For the possibility of something working out. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, nothing's guaranteed. And as you are now educating so many women like yourself, what do you wish you had known? And what are you now, as a result, telling them? Because you talk a lot about how, especially as the daughter of immigrants, growing up Latina, like you don't get the financial literacy that the average person might, and even the average person's not getting great financial literacy, let's be honest, but it's even more difficult to get access and to get this information. And so you read 50 books. Was there any kind of like breakthrough that you had after you read those 50 books that you're like, okay, this is it. This is the way to do it. And I wish I had known this sooner.
Yeah. That breakthrough was implementing the advice I was learning from mostly white male authors, implementing that advice with my Latino family. and seeing mm-hmm. that there was a culture clash and they're like, this is not how we do money. I don't know who taught you this. And I'm like, the books did. They're like, no, that you're doing it wrong. And that's when I learned that there was a big culture clash. The way that the typical white American handles money is from an individualistic point of view, where it's very much like you pull yourself from the bootstraps, you figure it out. If you have money problems, you don't tell other people about it. You just swipe it on a credit card and figure it out. Where with a collectivist culture, which most Latin Americans are, and most of the world, honestly, we're very communal. So that means that we're the first people we go to when we need help is family. We don't go and charge on a credit card or go into the bank and get a bank loan. So I was trying to implement, again, this white financial advice with my Latino family. And it was like a wave of backlash.
Yeah. So tell me, this brings us really nicely to Cultura and Cash and your message for this generation. You know, because you're an avid reader, there are many books about personal finance, especially for women and especially for young women. But I want you to talk a little bit more about the specialness of this book and how it does speak to and shine a light on these cultural differences and what you want us to embrace and maybe not embrace necessarily. Because you know, culture is a teacher, but sometimes you take the good with the bad.
Exactly. Yeah. I say eat the fruit and spit out the seeds, right? So,
love it.
Yeah. And I didn't make that up. I don't know who said it, so I will not take credit for that. But I mean, my book is the first book that addresses how your culture and your community and your family affect how you interact with money, right? Because we didn't all grow up in the same household, right? So, picture this, like, I know you're also the daughter of Iranian immigrants, but me being the daughter of Mexican immigrants, my parents lived in survival mode. They didn't have a lot of money. Their biggest priority was just keeping the lights on. And in the fact that they were able to do that, that was success in America. So that's what I thought was being fiscally responsible, paying my bills on time and not getting evicted. I didn't realize that you're supposed to be building your net worth, paying off debt, investing, all these things that are so important for our financial wellness. It's also a book that talks about setting financial boundaries with family. Again, none of these white books ever address that topic because the philosophy with them is you're not a bank, don't loan money to people, or if you do, you know, pretend it's a gift and you're never going to get it back. But with my culture, it's very much expected that if there's some sort of financial emergency or financial hardship, you as the daughter, the one who's quote unquote made it and went to college and made something out of herself, is expected to give back and support those that rallied around you when you were young. On top of that, there's also a lot of mistrust of financial systems within the Latino community. That's mostly because our family immigrated from countries where the financial systems over there were not as well regulated. So they bring those fears here. And instead of adopting the U.S. financial system, they are underbanked keep their money stuffed underneath the mattress, that sort of thing.
You talked about how you yourself were very frugal and you had this plan to retire by 45. How have your plans changed since?
I love this question. So, you know, when I was all about the FIRE movement, I was like, I'm going to use my free time to do my hobbies. I love volunteering, to travel a little bit more and just live a soft life, right? Because although I did like my job and I was good at it, I didn't love it, right? Mm-hmm. And now that I've been working for myself, doing something I absolutely love. I loved it so much, I did it for free, right? As a volunteer with the YWCA. Now that I'm getting paid to do what I love, I have definitely eased up on early retirement because I like what I do. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to work till I'm 80. But if I get to do this kind of work until I'm 50, 55, I would be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the FIRE movement, maybe we can talk about this just a little bit more because I'm sure this comes up a lot in your conversations and having experienced it a little bit. Like, how do you define FIRE? I mean, financial independence? Let's just take the first half of it. Because I think actually more and more people are like, I'm getting rid of the RE. For me, it's not about retiring early. It's about financial independence, which means maybe I am working in my 60s, but I'm doing what I love, or I'm not working full time, what have you. But how has your perception of financial independence evolved, even as you've been writing this book and talking to many people over the last few years?
Yeah. So to be clear, I am not financially independent. I wish I was. Financial independence is when you don't have to show up to work, right? Your money's making money, whether it's a real estate portfolio or the stock market or some sort of business that doesn't need you to run. So I am not there, although I hope to be there soon at some point. But I am financially stable. And that's something that my family still isn't, honestly. My grandparents, my mom, my dad's kind of okay. But it's just to be financially secure and then some, to have the ability to travel, to upgrade on flights, to be able to give my grandma an allowance because she raised me as a child.
I think that there is a lot of pressure. And that's kind of what I was getting at with FIRE, is like a lot of people give up because it's hard, you know, to create that kind of pressure to, like, I have to retire by 45. Naturally, too, I think as the children of immigrants, there's a lot of pressure to succeed and do better than your parents and carry the torch. They work so hard. They made so many sacrifices. Mm-hmm. I feel like that can work against you. Can you speak to that a little bit? If you have someone coming to you and they're like, I really want to be successful, but I'm so overwhelmed. Like, there's so much pressure on me. I don't know if I'm making the right decisions. I don't even know where to start. How do I work towards financial independence?
Yeah, that was me for a long time. I've evolved from then, but now that's my reader, right? So that's why I have the book out, to help my reader have that transformation too, because we're instilled as Latinos, Latine, to light ourselves on fire to keep other people warm. There is no importance to the individual. And as a bicultural Latina, I reject that. I say, no, I matter too. I'm a person too. Mm-hmm. And my goals and my dreams matter too. It's not just what's good for the family. So again, that's why I had so many money clashes with my family, because they didn't care about my financial goals. They're just like, we need money and you need to figure out how to give it to us. So when I do meet my readers or my community members on social media with that question and that pain point, I say, it's okay to prioritize your finances and to put your oxygen mask first. That way you're able to build a solid financial foundation for yourself. And then if you still want to support, you are then in a better place to be able to support those that you love. But you can't be pouring out of an empty cup. And that's where they feel so conflicted. And I did too for many years.
How do you have that conversation though with your parents or others who are like, well, you have a job, so, and it pays way more than what we've ever made. So I don't understand, you know? Yeah. And so how deep do you get into it with them? And I know loud budgeting is a thing right now amongst peers, but can you practice this with your parents too?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think what's important to note though, within the Latino culture, money is very taboo. So it can be seen as disrespectful to bring it up. So there might be some resistance when you first try to talk about the topic. But I would encourage my reader, my community member, to keep trying normalizing money conversations. And the way that I would approach this is by sharing, hey, I just got a 10% raise at work and I want to tell you about what I plan to do with this extra money. Because they'll immediately say, oh, are you going to get a new car? No, I'm not going to get a new car. The car that I have works fine. But instead, I'm going to use this extra money to pay down debt or to start a savings funds for a house payment, right? So again, the loud budgeting part of it, where you're telling your friends and family your money goals so that they understand that when they are asking you for money, it's not a free-for-all, right? Because you have your own financial priorities that you're taking care of yourself.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me. Until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
You've had some incredible support behind this book. I'm a big fan. Eva Longoria. How does it feel to get that kind of recognition and support? I just want to hear your reaction to all that, because I think that is just so special.
Thank you. What a sweet question. It's honestly unreal. I still can't believe it. And people that know me for a long time, they know that Eva Longoria isn't just like a big A-list celebrity to me. I've actually looked up to Eva Longoria for 15 years. She's my idol. I've been to several events where she was, you know, presenting something or advocating for something. So I've been following her career journey for a long time. So the fact that her name is on my cover is just something I could have never imagined. And I actually didn't want to forget that moment. So I bought myself a ring. I don't have it on right now. I usually have it on, but it's an everyday ring. That's my Eva ring. So I get to look at it every day and think, this was a big thing that happened to you. Yes. And I always celebrate it every time that I see my ring. So I love it.
That is so sweet. That's a great tip for anybody listening. If you've got, you know, cause I write about the fear of endings in my book, and how, like, when something extraordinary happens and then it ends, there's a bit of grief with that. Like, you're not, you know, like, I'm hoping maybe one day you'll continue to be friends with Eva and, like, you'll hang out, you'll go on vacation together and you'll become best friends. But
we're manifesting an in-person event. We're working on it. Believe me.
But, like, to relive that thrill and that joy, to have that reminder on your hand, which is something that you see every day, is just, that's smart. And yeah, my friend wrote a book called Micro Joys, which she was on the show at the top of the year. And I feel like that's a great micro joy example. It's like a little something to kind of bring you back to some happiness in your life.
And you know what? It really gives me a pep in my step, especially if I'm going to be nervous for a TV interview or something. I look at the ring and I'm like, you can do hard things. Like, Eva Longoria believes in you. You got this. It really feeds my soul. I'm so happy I made that purchase.
Your book is organized, the framework, it's the first gen five. There's a focus on peace of mind funds, budgeting, debt repayment, credit building, and long-term investing. I find that long-term investing part of the framework, it's always like the last thing on the list. And as a result, sometimes we never get to it because we feel like we have to get all of these other ducks in a row first. We got to get out of debt first. We got to make good money first. We have to have savings first. What do you tell your audience about that hierarchy and that priority. Because I of course, want to encourage everybody to invest as soon as possible. But then, of course, you also have these other responsibilities that, frankly, might need to be taken care of first. But how do you do it so that you don't delay investing for too long?
Yeah, the way I encourage my reader to approach their finances is by doing all five pillars at the same time. And I say they can be done. And then as you pay off debt, you can increase your savings, you can increase your investing. But I say, think of it like a garden. You're not just going to water one side of the garden and completely neglect the other part. You have to evenly water the garden so it's beautiful and flourishes, right? So what I tell them is, I understand if you're burdened with a bunch of debt, credit card debt, yeah, you probably should be focused on paying down that debt first. And I give them the tools to do that. But I say, at the very minimum, you need to get that employer match if you have one at work. And I explain the benefits of that, how to, you know, opt in through your HR. So, and I also explain how Latinas can't afford to not invest because of the Latina wage gap. We have the second longest life expectancy. I think first is Asian women. We also have added financial obligations, again, to our family to help our parents retire. So we cannot afford to not invest.
And where do they start? I mean, you said the 401k and get the match, but what if you're freelancing? What if you don't have a match at your work? I just read something about the 401k is going away in like 10 years. Have you read this?
Oh, really?
It's, no, I haven't. I don't know. Maybe it was just, maybe I have to go back and check the source. But obviously, don't worry, anyone, if you're investing in your 401k, that's not to alarm anybody. But it's just, I think the financial industry is always going to be evolving and there's always going to be something new. But sure. It's been about 40 years since the 401k came out. So it's
the
been
80s,
lasting
right?
for a while. In the 80s, But do you like a Roth IRA? Do you like, you know, and then when you, I start when you get, I feel like when you get into like the Roth IRA and the traditional IRA, people start to sleep. They go to bed.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my gosh, what? My brain broke.
I take pride in not putting people to sleep when I talk about those topics. And it's just because it excites me so much that people can see the passion behind it. I do talk about Roth IRAs in the book as well. And I mentioned how they're industry agnostic, right? So you can be a doctor, you can be a waitress, you can be a content creator and have a Roth IRA as long as you qualify for one. So I do explain the benefits of that. So I say, if you don't have a workplace retirement plan, this will take a little bit more work for you to open one on your own, choose your investments, but it's something that's available to you too. And if you can swing both, you absolutely should swing both because of the different tax treatments.
The reviews for your book, the reviews for your book, Cultura and Cash, are 5 out of 5 across the board. One is, this is not just to, to feed your ego here. But I do want to point out Kathy in the audience said that your book helped her lay down some of the shame that she had around her personal finances and things like shame and guilt and just negative feelings about money. I think if you can walk away from reading a book or having a session with somebody and at least feeling a little bit more confident and not guilty and shameful, mm-hmm. I feel like that is like 50% of the work.
Absolutely. Mindset's so important.
What are some Absolutely. Things that you were shameful of or that you felt were, for you at least, just real pain points around money?
Yeah, I would say that I felt that I wasn't a good daughter or a good family member if I wasn't putting my family first. And like I said, I really encouraged my reader to take a bicultural approach to money where you're not going to act like these old white men that tell you just worry about yourself and don't loan money to anybody because you're not a bank, but that you're also not going to light yourself on fire and forget about yourself along the way. So let's find something in the middle where it allows you to create financial stability for yourself, maybe support your family in a minimal way if that's still important to you and they really, really need the help. But it's not until you are in a solid financial foundation that you can then give back to others. Because what happens is our community, again, we're taught to give, give, give. And I've done that. I gave, gave, gave when I was buried in debt, had a very low salary, and that breeds resentment. because you're not doing it out of your own will. You're doing it because your arm's being twisted and this is what you're expected to do. So now that I've learned that it's okay to set financial boundaries and to prioritize my finances too, I give freely and willingly, and it feels so much more beautiful to do it on my terms instead of being felt that you have to.
What's a message that you want the parents of the readers to get around money? Because it's right. Because I'm just thinking,
that's another
like
book.
It's another book for sure. Yeah. Hey, parents, here's how to not, you know, raise kids that have resentment around their financial relationship with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would beg to ask, you know, what would you have wished that your parents were a little bit more aware of when it came to your financial reality and also the reality of so many of your audience members, things like student loan debt and the cost of living, right? If you're making the big money, but you have to move to Chicago or New York to earn it, it's not like, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't go as far. So I think that it takes two, right? It's yes, like great to have these scripts and to have these mindset shifts as the child of an immigrant, but also I wish like the parents would also, parents can learn a few things too.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good thing is I have experience with divorced parents. They're divorced because they just, again, couldn't agree on anything. So one parent, my mom, does not agree with this bicultural approach to money. She feels that I've turned my back on my Mexican values and that this is not how Mexican people operate. And I had to remind her, I'm not just Mexican. I'm Mexican American. So again, those American values are going to seep in because I live in America, right? Mm-hmm. And so she is very stubborn and will not understand. And she actually has said it that she believes I'm poisoning young people's minds with this knowledge.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. We're not close. She and I are not close.
Wow.
And my father on the other end is very supportive. And when he's asked for help, he actually has asked me to buy a home. He wants me to use my first time homeowner's credit or whatever that would be for him to buy a home that he can retire in. And he says when he passes, he'll leave me the house. And I tell him, I'm not going to give up those benefits for your house. Those benefits when I decide to be a homeowner. And he's understanding. He doesn't guilt trip me or tell me you owe me this. He does kind of say, I wish you could help me with this. And I'm like, Dad, I wish I could too. But again, these benefits should be for me. You had your benefits that you got to use, right?
Right. Wow. I didn't know I was going to get that answer.
I'm very real, Farnoosh. I don't know if you know that about me. I'm very transparent. I'm an open book. Yeah.
Well, okay. So what's the dumbest question you've gotten? Or not, I mean, you know, dumb in the sense that like, it just kind of, I, because people can be so ignorant and I try to be, I mean, I ask some stupid questions sometimes too, but I feel like people who stick their foot in their mouth when they're asking you a question about maybe your thoughts around money and your narrative and, you know, I don't know, has anyone ever like said something that made you go, maybe you want to take that back and take it again?
Are you saying an ally, somebody outside of the community that's a well?
Yeah, or like a reporter, you know, someone who just clearly like didn't understand your origin story and like where you were coming from.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people may not understand that feeling of needing to support financially support family members. They just think, wait, no, you're adults and you don't owe them anything. And they're your parents. You're the children. They should be giving you money. And that's just because that's their lived experience. That's their culture, right? So sometimes it can be hard for people to wrap their head around that. And I've had friends, white friends, that are like, stop giving money to your grandma. Stop giving. They should have saved for themselves. They should have, you know, they had their whole life to work. And they don't understand the challenges that my grandma or my parents had. And not just that, but again, that culturally is instilled in me to value family. So my finances will always be tied to my family in some way or another.
That's the word, right? Value. What are your values? You know, I remember I had a friend at work who came to me for financial advice, and she was like, I don't know, Farnoosh, I make $90,000 a year. I'm a single woman. I don't have dependents, but I have debt. And I just feel like I want to have a good life. And I just feel like I'm always just treading water. Mm-hmm. And I look at her budget and it's like, she spends 10% on tithing, like to her church. Mm. And I was like, okay, I get that this is important to you, but you also have credit card debt, you have student loan debt, you have a car loan, you know, can you wait to do this? Because your point, it's not, and maybe a naiver me would have been like, just get rid of that expense. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. But truthfully, maybe it's like, okay, we need to work out a way now so that you can, mm-hmm. yeah, so that you can like address your values more mm-hmm. thoroughly and more impactfully sooner than later. But like, mm-hmm. let's work on a debt repayment plan so that we can get back to this really important value of yours. And I think sometimes just, you know, framing it like that, people start to trust you more, you know, as opposed to being like, okay, that's a silly expense, because there's so much financial advice out there, which is why your voice is so refreshing, that does shame and does give you these like ultimatums with your money. And like, you got to do it this way. This is the only way. This is the right way. And I just want everyone listening to know that there is no one right way to manage your money. And it comes down to your values and what's important to you. But sometimes you have to shift and you have to wait and you have to be patient. Well, otherwise you're just going to be constantly chasing your tail, like my friend was
running in place, and you're never going to get better. And again, that will eventually breed resentment, because you're like, I did everything right. I went to college.
I hear that so often. I did everything right. I did everything right. I'm using air quotes. I did what I was mm-hmm. supposed to do. I made my parents happy. What's missing from that equation, you think? Like, what is the irony skills of all of that?
Yeah, that we don't mm-hmm. get taught how to manage our money in our college education or in the workplace. Luckily, some workplaces now are offering, you know, financial wellness programs. So they'll have speakers like you and I come and share these insights, right? But yeah, just because you graduated from college, that doesn't mean you know how to manage your money. So it's still an important skill that we need to learn to really have a successful life.
And also learn that life doesn't always work out the way you thought it would, you know, just mm-hmm. because you work hard and do all the quote unquote right things doesn't mean that there's going to be some shiny present for you waiting at the end. I hope there is, but maybe it's not going to happen when you thought it was, or it wasn't going to be as big as you thought, or it was going to be a different gift. Like, you have to, I think that as parents, again, advice for the generation before you, I think it's about managing expectations too, and letting your mm-hmm. kids know, like, yes, you have to work hard and you want to make the best choices and educate yourself, but sometimes life throws you curveballs. And it's not about, at that point, it's not about stopping or being resentful or going, oh my God, woe is me. It's like, okay, getting into strategy mode, because you are a smart person.
Learning the lesson from it all, right? I love the saying, you can either let it make you bitter or make you better. Right. So every failure or every mistake, there's always a lesson that's either for you so that you don't repeat it again, or so that you can share it with others, like how I do with mentees or with my followers, so they don't have to suffer like I did.
You're going to make it bitter or better. I like that. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Gigi. Giovanna Gonzalez, thank you so much. Your book again is called Cultura and Cash. Everybody, you can buy it where all your favorite bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, IndieBound, Bookshop. I'll have those links in our show notes. Thank you so much and congrats again.
Thank you so much for having me on, Farnoosh.
Thanks so much to Giovanna Gigi Gonzalez for joining us. You can follow her on social media. Her TikTok is at the First Gen Mentor. By the way, Gigi was named 40 under 40 by the Hispanic Alliance for Career Enhancement, a Latinx to Watch by Hispanic Executive Magazine, and a top 25 creator by Fast Company. You can check out her book, Cultura and Cash, at culturaandcash.com. I'll see you back here on Wednesday. I hope your day is so money. Hosting
hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.